The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. Recently, we lost our poet-in-residence, Conrad Balliet, who hosted Conrad's Corner on WYSO for almost a quarter century. And Conrad died recently, and we've been remembering him with various tributes here on the station. And I went back into my archive, and I found an interview that I did with a poet back in 2002. And at the time I did this interview, I did not realize how famous this poet was at the time. He's no longer with us. His name was Galway Connell, and he was very prolific. He lived a long time. He wrote a lot of very interesting poetry. And as we remember Conrad Balliet and his legacy and his love of poetry, we're going to celebrate poetry here in the Book Nook today with this archived interview recorded back in 2002 with Galway Connell. We call it the Best of the Book Nook.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and we're celebrating poetry during the month of April. And today we've been joined by a man who's been writing poetry for quite some time, and he's really put out a lot of wonderful poems. His name is Galway Connell. In fact, a couple of his books have just been reissued. Welcome to the program, Galway.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Galway, I'm guessing from your first name that you're maybe a bit of Irish descent.
Well, my mother was Irish. I mean, she came over here as an adult. But my father was a Scotsman.
Oh. How did you become a poet? What was the process? When did you decide this is what you wanted to do?
Well, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I hope I'm a poet, but I couldn't really say I've become one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Frost said among all his sayings, this one is perhaps one of the more true. Poet is a word of praise, and you can say of another person that he or she is a poet, but it would be immodest to say it of yourself.
Oh.
Other people may say it of you, and you may bask in the glow of that compliment. So I just started writing poetry and became more and more entranced by it and never stopped. But I wrote poetry for quite a long time before I published in magazines, and then for quite a long time before I published a book. So I kind of gradually slid into the position where people called me a poet.
Mm. You have a poem where you describe going to see Robert Frost.
Yeah.
You actually did that.
I did that, yeah. In poetry, you can't make things up, you know. Poetry has a kind of compact with the reader that unless it's made clear that this is a persona you're writing in, whatever is, or whatever is in the poem was in life.
Mm. In that poem, if I recall, you're trying to figure something out about him.
Well, I was asking myself why he talks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I visited him, of course, I didn't have very much to say, really. I was quite young, 21 or something, and he talked a great deal. He was living out in the country and working alone all morning, and he was very happy to have someone to talk with or talk to, however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And was that in Vermont?
That was in Vermont, yeah.
Something about Vermont, isn't it? Isn't that where you live as well?
Frost lived more years in New Hampshire, but he did spend the last part of his life in Vermont, in Ripton, Vermont, and was the first state poet of Vermont.
I understand this is a hat that you've also worn.
Well, yeah, it is. I was the second state poet of Vermont, but Frost actually clung to this title for a long time. About 12 years or 15 years after his death, he still kept his grip on the title, and the legislature had to meet and write a new state poet law, saying that there was these were 4-year terms, and at that point I was appointed for my 4 years.
My guest is Galway Connell. Now, what duties does that involve, being the state poet of Vermont? What do they expect from you?
Well, see, if it were a poet laureate, like in England, there would be duties. You'd have to write an ode to the governor and an ode on the opening of the legislature and an ode on Vermont Day and so forth. But by calling it a state poet, all these duties are, none of these duties pertain. And it's like the state bird. The state bird is the hermit thrush. And the hermit thrush sings only when it wants to sing and only what it wants to sing. And the Vermont state poet is the same way.
Well, no wonder Frost didn't want to give it up. It sounds like a pretty good gig.
Great gig, yeah.
Galway, you have a couple of, well, actually several books that have just been reissued on the Mariner imprint. Tell us about these books, how they originally existed, and how they are different today.
These two books that have come out are actually, one holds two, what were for first publication, two separate books, and the other, which is called Three Books, contains three previously published books. So there are five books there that came out as separate volumes, and then they've been put together to and reissued. They were put together and reissued in these larger volumes. And then I was, you know, I would read out of these volumes, and when I had readings, and sometimes I would find little flaws in the poems, and I would make note of them. And over the years, I discovered that I was dissatisfied with a lot of points in these poems. So I just told my editor that, and asked about the possibility of a reissue. And when they went into the Mariner series, they actually are new editions of all the poems, and some of them, you know, very much, some of them exactly the way they were, and some of them very slightly changed, and some considerably changed.
Now, when you talk about considerably changing a poem, what would be some of the motivations for doing that?
Well, I would say that this poem is the poem of a raw youth who didn't really know how to write poetry and rambled on with what really is prose chopped up into line lengths. And so there's only one poem that I would describe that way. I think it was called Tillamook Journal.
Oh.
And I cut it maybe you know, by one third or maybe by one half, and compressed it and tried to give it some you know, verbal vitality by compression. And so that was the most extreme case.
Now, is that one that you wrote originally out in Oregon?
Yeah.
I believe that's an area that's a beautiful area that had a lot of timber, and they cut most of it down.
Well, the Tillamook area was actually burned down.
Oh.
One of the largest forest fires they've had out there. And so the area that I was writing about was called the Tillamook Burn.
Okay.
And it's quite an amazing place because it went on and on with these these ghostly tree trunks and a lot of slash and erosion and
You love to write about your travels, and you also love to write about nature, and you seem to have a thing for frog ponds, or you did. You seem to love to write about the frog pond.
Do I really?
Yeah.
Well, one could do worse than write about frog ponds. I do have a pond up in Vermont on my property, which was the farm pond originally, but the dam was let go, and it became relatively shallow, and so I dubbed it the frog pond.
Oh.
And I've written a couple of poems, it's true, now that you mention it, about the frog pond.
Well, it caught my ear and my eye, and I'm rather fond of frog ponds myself and frogs.
The noise they make and the singing they make in the evening is so splendid. But, you know, they're disappearing.
Yes, I understand that a particular farm chemical, I think atrazine, is really having a terrible impact because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
My guest is Galway Connell, and we'd love to hear a poem. Do you have one that you'd like to share with our listeners?
It's called The Road Between Here and There. Here I heard the snorting of hogs trying to re-enter the under-earth. Here I came into the curve too fast on ice and touched the brake pedal and sailed into the pasture. Here I stopped the car and snoozed while two small children crawled all over me. Here I reread Moby Dick, skipping big chunks, skimming others in a single day while Maud and Fergus fished. Here I abandoned the car because of a clonk in the motor and hitchhiked, which in those days in Vermont meant walking the whole way with a limp, all the way to a garage where I passed the afternoon with ex-loggers who had stopped by to oil the joints of their artificial limbs and talk. Here a barn burned down to the snow. Friction, one of the ex-loggers said. Friction? Yep, the mortgage rubbing against the insurance policy. Here I went 80, but was in no danger of arrest, for I was blessed speeding, trying to get home to see my children before they slept. Here I bought speckled brown eggs with bits of straw shitted to them. Here I brought home in the back seat two piglets who rummaged around inside the burlap sack like pregnancy itself. Here I heard again on the car radio Handel's concerto transcribed for harp and lute, which Ines played to me the first time, making me want to drive after it and hear it forever. Here I sat on a boulder by the winter steaming river and put my head in my hands and considered time, which is next to nothing, merely what vanishes and yet can make one's elbows nearly pierce one's thighs. Here I forgot how to sing in the old way and listened to frogs at dusk. Here is the chimney, standing up by itself and falling down, which tells you approach the end of the road between here and there. Here I arrive there. Here I must turn around and go back, and on the way back look carefully to left and to right, for when the spaces along the road between here and there are all used up, that's it.
You had a poem in three books, and it's called The Correspondence School Instructor Says Goodbye to His Poetry Students.
Oh, yeah.
I was fascinated by this one. What's the story behind it?
Well, the University of Chicago asked me to, they had what they called a home study program, and so they had courses that they mailed out all over the country to people who paid a certain tuition fee and then sent in their lessons to an instructor and so on. So I wrote a syllabus for the poetry writing course, and I taught it for the University of Chicago for several years while I was living here in New York on the Lower East Side. And every day when I came home, there was this big chunk of mail from my students. And first thing I would do when I went up the stairs would be to open all the envelopes, go through all the poems, look at all their comments and their answers, and send them out again. And it was a I had to keep work hard to keep up because the bundles of letters kept getting larger. So finally, I knew I was leaving the country, so I had to give up the course. And I wrote a poem of goodbye to my poetry students, which I didn't send to the students, by the way.
Right, I'm sure. It sounds like you had some rather bizarre correspondence going there as far as what they were sending you.
I just picked out a few of the more extreme. Most of them were really wonderful people. Mm-hmm. And some of them came to see me in New York, and that was a little disturbing because, I like dealing with the image of the person I had in my mind, and as soon as I got a real person there, it somehow broke the spell. Mm-hmm. So it was like a platonic teaching where the physical presence was not to be to intrude the way it does in the actual classroom. So it was kind of a special way of seeing other people, of having a very clear imagination of them. Of course, we all have the same experience in other ways of hearing a voice or seeing a written handwriting without ever seeing the handwriting without ever hearing the voice, or hearing the voice without ever seeing the person. Mm-hmm. So I wrote this poem, and shall I read it?
Sure.
The correspondence school instructor says goodbye to his poetry students. Goodbye, lady in Bangor, who sent me snapshots of yourself after definitely hinting you were beautiful. Goodbye, Miami Beach urologist, who enclosed plain brown envelopes for the return of your very clinical sonnets. Goodbye, manufacturer of brassieres on the coast, whose eclogues give the fullest treatment in literature yet to the sagging breast motif. Goodbye, you in San Quentin, who wrote, "Being German, my hero is Hitler," instead of "Sincerely yours," at the end of long, neat-scripted letters extolling the Pre-Raphaelites. I swear to you, it was just my way of cheering myself up as I licked the stamped self-addressed envelopes, the game I had of trying to guess which one of you this time had poisoned his glue. I did care. I did read each poem entire. I did say what I thought in the mildest words I knew. And now, in this poem or chopped prose, no better I realize than those troubled lines I kept sending back to you. I have to say, I'm relieved it's over. At the end, I could feel only pity for that urge toward more life your poems kept smothering in words, the smell of which days later tingled in your nostrils as God-given impulses to write. Goodbye, you who are, for me, the postmarks again of imaginary towns, Xenia, burnt cabins, Hornell, their solitude given away in poems, only their loneliness kept. Well, as I read that poem, I'm not sure I really like it. Mm-hmm. I think it shouldn't be in this book.
Uh-oh.
Because that's what I mean. Uh-oh. Because there's something of a snide superiority here. Uh-huh. In the speaker's voice, kind of mocking these people who are trying to write. And there's not enough making common. There's an attempt or two to make common cause with them, but not enough real, genuine making of common cause. Yeah, I'd never write that today. Uh-huh. When I was in my 20s, I was much more arrogant and contemptuous of what I regarded as incapable poets. Mm-hmm. Than I am today. So I would never write such a thing. And why should I foist on the world yet another form of mockery. Can you answer me that, Vic?
Well, it's a time capsule in a way. There's a photo of you on the back of the book, and you look like a film star. I mean, you're incredibly handsome. It's a wonderful photo of you. And to give you some sense of validation, you'll be happy to know that one of those imaginary towns you mentioned is 10 miles away from here, and I'm sure that they perked up when they heard you say Xenia.
Oh.
Because Xenia's just down the road from our studios here in Yellow Springs.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a real town,
uh-huh.
And they heard you say their name. So arrogant or not, that's where your head was at back then, and you can disown it if you want or make a disclaimer, and I definitely understand you're wanting to do that. How have you changed as far as your outlook towards other poets over that interval?
Oh, I don't know. I think I realize we're all in this together. You know, we're all stumblers through the dark, and some people do a little better than the others, and they become, published. And some of those who are published do a little better than the ones who weren't. And than others who were published, and they perhaps have a certain renown. But on the other hand, I know that luck plays a big part in this, whether you get published or not, and who gets well known. If you look at the 19th century and think which poets were well known in this country, we realize that none of the poets we really admire were known, and most of the poets who were known, we no longer admire. Mm-hmm. So they felt very superior in their time, those published poets like Longfellow and William Cullen Bryant and so on. They felt very superior to be the great poets of their country. But the real poets were Walt Whitman, Emily Dickinson, and Frederick Gardner Tuckerman, Whitman was known, but not read. Mm-hmm. And Dickinson was not known and not read, and Tuckerman was not known and not read, and actually he still isn't.
I've never heard of him. Tell me about him.
He wrote these beautiful sonnets, really extraordinary sonnets, the best thing that's happened to the sonnets since Shakespeare's sonnets.
Mm.
And somehow... But he wrote some longer poems that are pretty wretched. So there's about 12 sonnets that are supreme. Now, if I could talk somebody into publishing 12 sonnets of Tuckerman, I bet he would get to be known.
Wow. And
leave out all those others.
So it would be hard to find his work, it sounds like, in print.
Yeah, it may not be in print. Occasionally an edition of his work comes out and... by some enthusiast like me, and mm-hmm. then edited by some enthusiast like me, and then it disappears again.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd find him in a library, but you wouldn't find him in a bookstore.
Back in 1982, your selected poems received some fairly significant recognition. How did you feel at the time when this happened?
I don't know. You know, I've never taken prizes too much to heart. I know that it's wonderful to have a prize like the Pulitzer Prize or the National Book Award, because it does open certain doors for you and your books sell better and mm-hmm. so on. However, you know, as I was saying about the 19th century American poets, the Pulitzer Prizes would have gone not to the best poets. So I don't really think of them as indicating anything, any reliable judgment regarding the quality of one's work. But they represent, you know, the very subjective judgment of a set of judges, and that's and it's wonderful to have their judgment.
My guest is Galway Kinnell, and he has a couple of books that have just been reissued. Actually, am I doing the math right? 5 books originally, now turned into 2.
Yeah.
Okay. One is called 3 Books, and it's Body Rags, Mortal Acts, Mortal Words, and the Past. And the other one, the title now is The Avenue Bearing the Initial of Christ into the New World, which is the name of a long poem.
Yeah.
Tell us about that poem.
Well, The Avenue Bearing the Initial of Christ into the New World is Avenue C on that, and the Lower East Side, where the avenues are have letters and the cross streets have numbers. And it has 14 blocks to it, which correspond to the 14 stations of the cross.
Mm.
So it has that kind of structure. In each of the sections, there's, you know, some degree more and some degree less, some allusion to those stations, to the stations of the cross. But it's really, that was just a kind of a framework in which to write about the Jewish life that that was in those days so full of energy, so full of color and vitality in that part of the Lower East Side, with its outdoor markets and its fish markets and its shops of all sorts, and its and its language and the, I don't know, the color and the throngs of it all seemed like another world to me, just completely thrilling. You know, it was the way I think Robert Frost must have felt when he went up to, he was born in California, when he went up to New Hampshire and discovered New England farmers, the small farms of New England. He must have said, oh my God, this is another world. Wow. Mm. And he wrote and wrote and wrote. He wrote all his life about that world. Without it, you know, he would have had to find some world. And I was the same way. I spent just 2 years there, and that's where I wrote my poem.
Did you grow up?
In Pawtucket, Rhode Island.
Oh,
the decaying mill town.
Yes, I've heard a lot about it.
You have?
Yeah. Uh huh.
That's very surprising to me.
Well, I used to live in Boston.
Oh, you did.
I'm guessing that you're a closet Red Sox fan if you grew up in Pawtucket.
That's right. Now, don't mention these recent Yankee games. They mean nothing.
Right. Well, Galway, I know you've got a lot of stuff on your plate there, so we really appreciate you taking time to share some of your poetry with our listeners here in Southwest Ohio.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Vic, and I wish I had longer, but there we are.
My guest has been Galway Cannell, and you've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. That was the best of The Book Nook going back to 2002 and giving voice to a poet named Galway Cannell. And he is no longer with us. He lived a long time and wrote a lot of poetry, and we talked about some of it, and he shared some of it with us on the program back in 2002. And as we remember the late Conrad Balliot here on WYSO, who shared so many poems with you in the Miami Valley over the past 25 years, we are celebrating his legacy and his life and bringing a little extra poetry here on the Best of the Book Nook. And I was happy to be able to pull that one out of the archive and share it with you here in the Book Nook today. And Conrad and I came to the station the same year, and we were both brought into the station by the late Ruth Yellowhawk back in 1993. So I do share that in common with the late Conrad Balliot. Thanks for listening. For the Best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.